a high fly ball to left field. That's hit pretty well. Backcourt Thames, he's at the track, he's at the wall, he looks up and it is gone. A home run for Vernon, his 23rd, and the Angels have tied this game 1-1 here in the top of the second.
The Blue Jays would actually retake the lead in the bottom of the second inning. Colby Rasmus led off with a double. J.P. Arencibia walked behind him and a couple of ground balls later. The Jays had a 2-1 lead. That would be the last time they would lead in this game, as the Angels, with two out and nobody on in the top of the third inning, then exploded for 3 runs. Doubles by Alberto Ciaspo and Howie Kendrick and Vernon Wells. Sandwiched around a Mark Trumbo single, after which the Blue Jays blew a rundown play that would have ended the inning. And then Kyle Drabek came on in the fourth to give up 5 runs as the Jays continued to kick it around, looking absolutely awful over a 13-batter span in the third and fourth, in which the Angels scored 8 runs on 9 hits. That's a 13-batter span. And in there was a sacrifice bunt and a sacrifice fly. So the Angels actually went 8-for-10 and hit 800 over that span. Full measure for the 9-2 lead in the 10-6 win. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Jays Talk, Extendo style. We're taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell. Long distance 1-888-666-0590. Also answering tweets at Wilnerness590. And at Ashi Insane says, Cecil got the loss, but the Jays scored more runs than he gave up. How's that work? A fair question. When Brett Cecil left the ballgame, it was 4-2. The Jays wound up losing 10-6. Cecil gets the loss because the Blue Jays never tied the game or took the lead after he left. They trailed from that point on, and that makes him the losing pitcher, even if the Jays had lost 111-110. But had never tied the game or taken the lead. Callum is in Toronto. Hello.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. First, I just wanted to say that I agree with you about Drabek. I think he'll be fine, and we just need to remember that these things take time. And, you know, he may not pan out, but it would be silly to write him off at the age of 23.
Absolutely.
He's been so highly touted. And so to get to my questions, the first question I had was about taking Brett Cecil out after only 65 pitches. Like, I know he didn't have the greatest stuff tonight, but, you know, it's a meaningless game for us. And similar to, obviously, it was a different situation than the ones where Romero got taken out. But, you know, I think it would be good with such a young staff to let them pitch through trouble so they can kind of learn and get better and improve.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't really have an argument for you. I would have been fine with seeing Brett Cecil come back out for the fourth inning. I mean, his innings count is running up. You have to remember the time he spent in Vegas. The last couple of times that John Farrell has talked about Brett Cecil, he's made sure to remind us that this was a college reliever that the Blue Jays turned into a starter, and he made it to the big leagues pretty quickly. So I think there may be a bit of a concern about wear and tear on his arm. They've wanted to get Drabek a multiple inning stint for a while, and that's probably why that happened today.
Okay, that's fair. And so my second question real quick is about Joel Carino.
Yeah.
Because I think he's been just great out of the pen, and as good as we could have expected him to be out of the pen.
Oh, far better than we could have expected.
Oh, far better, yeah. But yeah. Does he not project as a starter?
He has been a starter his whole life, and he may be able to be a starter, for sure. Right now, though, they're breaking him in the bullpen, and that's okay. You know, it's what they did with Jimmy Key way back when, and it's what they did with Pat Henken. Sometimes when there's a need and there's a space, it's not such a terrible idea to have a guy work out of the bullpen in the major leagues for a while. But I think the Blue Jays still believe that they want to give him the opportunity to start in the future.
Okay, that's great. Well, I hope so. And thanks for taking my call, Mike.
All right. Thanks for the call. About Kyle Drabek, the one point that I wanted to make, Clay Buchholz, in his first extended appearance in the major leagues as a rookie in 2008, had a whip of 1.763. John Lester, as a rookie in the major leagues, first extended appearance in the major leagues, had a whip of 1.648. Kyle Drabek going into tonight had a whip of 1.731. All around the same. Obviously, the walk's a major issue with Drabek, but you know, you got to imagine, since they've never been a major issue for him at any other level, that's probably going to change. Lester was 22. Buchholz was 23. Drabek is 23. Now Lester's 27, Buchholz is 26, and they're both stars. This is all I'm saying. It can take time. Let's give a listen. Before we give a listen, quickly, I've been asked on the Twitter by at Richard Castile, why does Scott Downs get a save when the lead was four runs? It's because the tying run was on deck. Anytime the tying run is on base or on deck, no matter what the score is, it's a save situation. There are three criteria for a save, three different ones. You have to come in for a full inning, at least, with a lead of no more than three runs when you come in. You have to pitch at least three innings, no matter what the score is. Or you can enter the game with a tying run on base, at bat, or on deck. All those things, of course, assuming that you finish the game and your team wins, you'll get a save. That's why Scott Downs got the save today. We play for you the musings of manager John Farrell after every game. When they win, Farrell can go almost 4 minutes. When they lose, he rarely breaks two. And tonight was one of those nights. Blue Jays falling 10-6 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Here's what the skipper had to say about it.
Overall, I thought we had a good offensive approach tonight. We continued to battle all the way through right to the end. Give us a chance to, you know, one swing of the bat, we're within one run. But when you get down 10-2, 10-3 at one point, obviously a pretty large margin to try to come back from. With their heavily right-handed lineup, I thought Brett tonight came out in the first inning, good assortment of off-speed pitches to keep some people off balance. But then as we got into the second and third inning, started to elevate the ball a little bit more and didn't really have a finishing type of pitch. And that was the thought with going to Kyle with that right-handed lineup. Once again, Kyle had very good stuff. Number of pitches found in the middle of the plate, and we saw a quick strike in that fourth inning with the five runs that they did score.
John, what happened to Brett? Why was he elevating his pitches?
Well, he would get into an account where he was down on his own to get ahead, and then it was a mislocated fastball to Vernon, mislocated fastball to Trumbo with a double down the right left field line. And it was just the inconsistent location throughout the at-bats to where he had the inability to finish some guys off. Didn't think his stuff was as sharp as he was his last time out, even though that was 10 days ago against Baltimore. But it was more just location inside a given at-bat where they did a good job fouling some pitches off to stay alive and then capitalized on a mislocated pitch. But, he battled for the time that he was out there. The big inning in the fourth is what the difference was and separated things out here tonight.
No question about that, John Farrell. The big inning in the fourth was five runs off of Kyle Drabek. The Blue Jays did kick the ball around a little bit behind him. Drabek didn't have as much help as he would need. As the Angels had a runner on first and one out, and he scored on a sacrifice fly. That's not supposed to happen. A wild pitch, although Drabek's fault there, and then Mike McCoy can't catch a fine throw right over the bag that would have maybe picked off Peter Borges. Instead, he scampers to third, scores on that sac fly. Then Howie Kendrick, Torrey Hunter, both single, and Mark Trumbo goes huge into the night. His 29th home run of the season, a three-run shot, four RBIs for the rookie tonight. That made it 9-2, and that was that. It is the Extendo Jays Talk, 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-660-590. Back on the other side of Andrew Nye's updated Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
The pitch line down the left field side. This is going to be in for extra bases. Scoring easily is Kendrick. Digging into second base is Torrey Hunter. Now the throw has the trail runner Trumbull caught in a rundown, and then he circles around Edwin Encarnacion and finds his way back into the bag safely at first base. And you hear the reaction of the fans here at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, that could have gotten the Blue Jays out of the top of the third inning and saved them, well, one run anyway, because Vernon Wells was next and hit a ground rule double. But Mark Trumbo hung up between first and second. A good throw by Eric Thames on his single to the corner. Edwin Encarnacion, though, was trying to make sure that Torrey Hunter didn't score when Hunter was only about 5 or 10 feet off of third base, maybe 15. And while Edwin was looking at third, Trumbo ran past him back to first. A lot of people thinking that he should have been called out for running outside the baseline, but you're only out for running outside the baseline if you're doing it to try to avoid a tag. And there wasn't even an attempt at a tag made on Mark Trumbo there. Part of a three-run third inning, after which Brett Cecil was lifted. Kyle Drabek came in for the fourth and gave up five runs. According to Gregor Chisholm of MLB.com, Brett Cecil said he was really surprised at being yanked after three and was at a loss for words. Just can't find the words to really explain anything right now. As we heard from John Farrell, he felt as though the ball was coming up on Cecil, and that's when he gets knocked around. And that's why he took the opportunity to take him out after three innings and 65 pitches. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-660-590. We go to Russ in New Jersey. Hello, Russ.
Hey, good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Could you believe it? The Red Sox fans were Yankee fans tonight. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for, you know, a little earthquake, a little, I don't know what. But, but something about, that's not good.
You're talking about Cecil being missed. Before I get to my comment, I don't know if you saw this, but this was pretty funny. Burnett was mad yesterday that Girardi pulled him out after four innings. I think he gave up nine hits and four runs, and he was really upset that Girardi pulled him out. I'm sure he's going to be blaming the Toronto media soon for his failures in New York this year, Burnett.
Yeah, I don't think he ever was hard on the Toronto media at all, but, you know, I don't know what's going on with AJ. You have a year like that, you really have no right to say anything, ever. And when you've gotten bombed, and Cecil gave up four runs on six hits through three innings, he's got a right to be confused. Not so much AJ, I don't think.
Right. Let me ask you, and I don't know if you've ever spoke to Alex about this, but I know people keep on bringing up names in the free agency market, and the upper echelon, you know, forget about the middle of the road free agents, but the top guys, and you know, this year will be Pujols and Fielder. How hard is it for Toronto not to compete on the money side of it? Because I know this year, you know, everyone's talking about they could be the surprise team, but getting the player, and I know the Latin players like Toronto, but mostly guys, especially guys who have experienced big markets and have experienced playoff success, you know, they want to play for, besides the Yankees and the Red Sox, the Cardinals. You know, the Giants will, I'm sure, will be in on Pujols this year with a lot of money coming. Even the Dodgers, if they could straighten out the situation. And Toronto, besides the fact of not being a major market, compound with the fact that you really have to play, you know, second fiddle playing in the American League to the Yankees and the Red Sox. Is it tough to get? How tough is it, and how much does he think you may have to overpay to get that top-of-the-line guy to try to come to Toronto?
I haven't really talked to him about that. And by the way, let me just say that it's over in Boston. The Red Sox have lost 7-5 to the Baltimore Orioles. Yankees won 5-0. So Boston's still two games up on Tampa, but the Angels are now only 3.5 games back. I think that a player's inclination, like you said, would be to sign with one of those perennial contenders if the money's the same. How much would the Blue Jays have to overpay in order to get people? I really don't know. I know that Paul Beeston is a phenomenal salesman, and Alex Anthopoulos is too, and they can both get their message across and make people understand what they're trying to do, what's happening here, and how great what's happening here has the potential to be. But there is always going to be that pull of, yeah, but I'm kind of guaranteed to be in the playoffs with those other teams. And that's a battle the Blue Jays are always going to have to fight.
Right. I just want to make one comment. I know you mentioned a couple weeks ago Pujols, and you weren't convinced the Yankees would be in on him, wouldn't be in on him.
Right.
I believe the Yankees have their DH, and his name is Alex Rodriguez. You know, they've paid him all this money, and even though the Yankees have all that money with his injuries and his back and all the injuries that he has had, I think he could look next, I don't know, full-time, but next year and probably the year after to be the full-time DH. Next year maybe, you know, DH a number of days and play third, because they got to keep him, you know, his bat in the lineup throughout this contract. So I don't think they'll be in the running for him, but you never know.
That's an interesting thought. Maybe Pujols can go back to playing third again. We shall see. Thank you, Russ. Appreciate the call. Definitely an interesting thought, but I think the Yankees will make room for whoever they have to make room for, however they have to do it. Maybe Alex Rodriguez winds up in right field. Paul is in Toronto. Hello, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
All right, thanks.
My question is, or my comment is, I've been patiently waiting for the Jays for years to threaten the Yankees or Red Sox, and every time I hear, oh, we can't compete with the Yankee payroll or the Red Sox, like, I like what Alex Anthopoulos is doing, I like a lot of the young players, but how come Tampa Bay can kind of threaten and we can't?
Well, Tampa Bay was the worst team in baseball for 10 years.
But so have the Jays.
No, the Jays haven't been even remotely close to the worst team in baseball.
So
ever.
We win 78 games or 80, and Tampa Bay wins 68. What's the difference?
The difference is about 18 spots in the draft,
okay,
which is kind of huge. When you draft at the top 10 years in a row, first in every round, 10 years in a row, you're going to build yourself up some very high-ceiling talent. The Rays also made some smart moves at trade deadlines, which is something that J.P. Ricciardi never did. They dealt now for later at the trade deadline, which they could afford to do because they were so far behind, and you know, that was a mistake on Ricciardi's part, never making those kinds of trades beyond Shannon Stewart trade in 2003.
Jays,
but those are the reasons that Tampa Bay is so good.
So how far back, I agree, J.P. Ricciardi, how far did he ruin this team? Like, did it take
I don't think
years?
J.P. Ricciardi ruined this team at all. The best player in the major leagues is on this team because J.P. Ricciardi traded for him. The Blue Jays ace is on this team because J.P. Ricciardi chose him in the first round of the draft.
Hmm.
None of that stuff counts, huh?
No, and that's about two moves of the bad 10 that he did, maybe. I don't know.
I don't want to get into the whole discussion of the history of J.P. Ricciardi here.
Yeah.
But you're just parroting what you've heard from other people who believe that J.P. did horrible things to this franchise. You cannot name 10 horrible moves that he made. I defy you to name 3 horrible moves that he made.
Yeah,
it didn't work out while he was here. They fell short, and there are things he could have done differently, and there are things he could have done better. But to suggest that he ruined the franchise or left them with nothing or anything like that is beyond the pale. It's just, there's no basis in fact.
Well, I'm patiently waiting. I don't know.
That's great. I mean, patience is important, but you know, this isn't the same rebuild that the Blue Jays were doing in 2003. And it's not the same thing that they tried in 2009. They started all over again when Alex Anthopoulos took over 18 months ago.
He's doing a fantastic job. But it's just too bad. Like, it just seems like Tampa Bay, like, they're going to be good for a while. And
Tampa Bay's not going to be good for that long.
No?
No. Tampa Bay can't. Tampa Bay is the Expos. That's what Tampa Bay is.
But that's the frustrating part, is that they draw 10,000. We draw a bit more than that.
Yep.
Like, they don't even care in Tampa Bay.
They had a 10-year head start of being awful. The Blue Jays haven't been awful at all. This is going to be their fifth winning season in the last 6 years.
The Jays have over. Like, they've done pretty good.
But that's the thing. I mean, you haven't had to endure the horrible, just patheticness that Tampa Bay went through for 10 years so that they could build this little 3.5-year run, and it's going to be over after this year. It's over now, pretty much. you know, they're only two games back. They could still make the playoffs. But this has been a remarkable run, coupled with an incredible collapse by the Red Sox to get the Rays in a race for the fourth year. And, you know, after this year, they may have to trade James Shields. And, you know, they had to trade Matt Garza after last year. They lost their whole bullpen. They may again. They can't sustain it because they can't afford to keep the guys they draft. And they draft very well, and they've drafted very high. The Blue Jays have locked up Ricky Romero. They've locked up Yunel Escobar. They've locked up Adam Lind. They locked up Aaron Hill, though that didn't turn out to be such a wonderful locking up. But the Blue Jays can keep their guys, and they can go out and spend money internationally. The Rays can't. Tampa Bay is the Expos. They're going to wind up being a farm system for a better team, and they're probably going to wind up moving away. The Blue Jays are very, very different than that.
Oh, yeah, let's hope so.
But, you know, the Rays got a big head start on the rebuilding, and it took them 10 years of being the absolute worst team in Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays finished last once in the last 15 years.
Okay.
Appreciate the call, Paul. I do, and I appreciate the patience. And you're going to need a little more, I think. But I think the payoff's going to be worth it. Let's go to another Paul in Toronto. Hello, Paul.
Hi there, Mike. First-time caller. If I stumble, I hope you'll pick me up quickly.
I will do my level best. Welcome aboard.
Thanks. Okay, I got two quick, important questions for you. Maybe you can answer them. If you can't, maybe you can find out the answer.
Sure.
Number one, what do you think of Batista? Why is he not in the cleanup spot and put Lynn in the third position batter? Because maybe he'll get some fastballs. Like, he's a left-hand bat. He can't hit left-hand pitching that I've seen all year, and I've followed him all year. But anyways, I like to see Batista. He should be in the cleanup spot where he belongs, I think, number one.
Lynn is actually hitting lefties almost as well as he's hitting righties this year.
Okay, I won't argue with it.
Yeah, the batting average is close to the same, but not as much slugging. I don't like the idea, first of all, of a 300 on base percentage hitting third, but I don't like the idea of a 300 on base percentage hitting fourth either. There's a mathematical component that would favor having your best hitter hit fourth. I really need to study that one a little bit more, because I kind of like the idea of making sure that the best hitter on the team is going to be up in the first inning every game, and hopefully with an opportunity to drive in runs. Then, the flip side of that is, well, if he's hitting third and he comes up with two out and nobody on, then he doesn't have a chance to drive in runs, whereas if anybody gets on base in that inning and he's hitting fourth, unless there's been a home run behind him, or a home run in front of him, or a double play in front of him, he'll still have that opportunity to bat in the first inning with runners on base batting cleanup, and may have the opportunity to drive in another run or two. So I don't know that I'm completely against the idea of the best hitter on the team batting fourth, though it's become the conventional wisdom to hit him third.
I am sorry. What I see this year is, they just pitch around him, and this is very frustrating for him. This is just killing him right now, because he's got no protection whatsoever. They will not pitch to him. Don't matter if there's bases loaded or even one, two on.
They pitched to him with the bases loaded, and they pitched to him with two on in the 10th last night, and he almost grounded into a double play.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's just lately, but he's the big hitter on the team. He's
yes,
your
he
RBI
is.
Man.
Sure he is.
Me off really upsets me about this team is that when the pitcher's in trouble out there, more often than ever, all year long, management never gets off their butts to come out and talk to the guy to try and calm him down when he gets in trouble. They wait until the guy gives up 3-4 runs, and then they come out and yank him or whatever. There's not one team that I've watched in baseball this year where the managers don't come out when the pitcher is getting in trouble, really in trouble, right away. Try and calm him down. If they can't, and if he keeps doing what he's doing, then you just yank him. That's it.
Yeah, but that's not really what's happening. I mean, that's what you're seeing, and you may have seen it a couple of times, but that's not really what's happening. Bruce Walton went out to talk to Brett Cecil tonight. Bruce Walton went out to talk to Kyle Drabek tonight.
Okay, all right.
You have to be very careful with your visits, because you're only allowed two in an inning. And once you go out and talk to a guy, it means you can't go out and talk to him again without taking him out of the game.
I know, in that inning.
Right. You have to be careful with that. You can't always come running out of the dugout at the first sign of trouble. You got to pick your spots.
I'll let it be.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Look a little more at, instead of just remembering the times that what you think happens, you got to look at the overall, and it's tough to do. And that's what happens to everybody. Peter is in St. Catharines. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mike. A couple things. First, you think you've seen enough of Kelly Johnson that to offer him that he'll re-sign with them next season?
I'm definitely going to offer Kelly Johnson arbitration if it's up to me. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So
he hasn't been great with the Blue Jays by any means, but okay. That doesn't change the fact that he's still the best second baseman available this off season, unless except for the trade market. So yeah, I'm offering Kelly Johnson arbitration.
Okay, very good. And I certainly. All right. And secondly, have you spoke to the Blue Jays? Being part of the postseason coverage again this year.
Yeah, I've been in the process of doing that. That's how the final homestand always goes. I spend most of the final homestand talking to every Blue Jay, getting all their contact info, getting their votes for the end of season poll for Blue Jays postseason awards, and hopefully, depending on the postseason schedule. As often as we're able to have pre-pregame shows in the postseason, we will have a Blue Jay on every day on that pre-pregame show. Which is something that I know a lot of people enjoy, including, of course, Peter in St. Catharines. And hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. We don't know what our plans are yet for postseason coverage, partly because postseason matchups aren't set yet, and therefore there's no schedule for the postseason. But once we do, we'll get that information out to you, and should the schedule allow for it, we will have the Blue Jay A Day pre-pregame show throughout the course of the Major League Baseball playoffs. But there are still 8 games to go in the season for the Jays, and these last 2 at home, tomorrow and Thursday. Tomorrow it's going to be Dustin McGowan against Danny Heron, the Blue Jays. And the Angels locked up at a game apiece so far in this series. They lose big tonight. 10-6 was the final score. Joel Piñeiro over Brett Cecil. And Scott Down strikes out Colby Rasmus to earn his first save of the season. Thanks to you for listening. Sorry to those of you whom we couldn't get. Thanks to Tom Young, Joe Sicilia, Joel McFadden. And go out there and please vote for Tom Cheek. Good night.